Moving on, IT service provider performance monitoring and reporting, whatever were mentioned or shown on the chart in you know, a previous slide, those are, you know, kind of explained here, which we discussed some time back. Once we have, you know, identified the improvement areas, I can choose to have either corrective action or a preventive action. My personal opinion is to always have a preventive action. Okay, corrective action is something you fix it after the problem comes in, but I would prevent it before the problem comes in. Okay, so preventive, you know, the measures or preventive controls, I would always give a thumbs up, you know, as a standard practice to be monitored and to be implemented by the partner. Okay, few examples are given, like monitoring network. Again, if I'm running a voice, whatever QoS or quality of service I have configured into my network links, are they being reported? Are they working as expected? And so on and so forth. Okay, so unless you monitor, you will not be able to improve it. Okay, so that's actually a golden key of success or a golden pass of success. Okay, we briefly touched based on the service transitioning in the previous chapter, that, you know, whenever you are changing your hands from one partner to a different partner, okay, there may be a several reason of changing the partner. Maybe the partner, the existing partner is going out of the business. Maybe measurement, the support, the outcome is not good of the existing partner and you won't like to change. Obviously, the new partner will be assessed through the RFP process and everything, and now it's time to transition the service from the existing one to the new one. There are several changes and, you know, sometimes it becomes very interesting, friends. Okay, when you decide, see, at some point in time, you should have a clear picture in mind that when you want to have this transitioning done. If you are pre-planned, okay, so whenever the renewal is going to come, maybe 3 months before or 6 months before you start working on evaluating the new partner, okay, because you cannot take the ad hoc decisions here. Okay, there may be a genuine business requirement where if the current provider is miserably failing, there may be a hostile kind of takeover. However, that is not recommended. You always should have the approach which is, you know for sure that this is going to come. Okay. Here, the one of or the few of the challenges which, you know, we seldom see is the lack of documentation. So whenever you are kind of onboarding a new partner, you may would like to have the clause which mandates them to create a document if it is not there. Straightforward. Okay. So likewise, the handshake, the knowledge transfer, the documentation, and also the parallel run happens as a part of the service transitioning. Few things to consider from the service transitioning point of view or standpoint is something, maybe you would like to have a parallel run, as I just mentioned, the parallel run wherein initially the new partner will just observe what is, you know, what are the trends of the tickets, what is, how the engineer, the existing partner is going to respond. And after, say, 15 days, you have the existing partner taking a back seat and the new partner to take the, you know, the driver seat to take care of the operations. So that's, you know, one of the consideration you would like to have. Also, sometimes what happens is that the businesses wants more. Okay. Now, one should also understand the limitation of the partner. The partner may not be in a position to do everything and anything what the business is demanding, right? So it's also a consideration one must have before we, you know, kind of evaluate, assess, onboard the partner. Transition challenges, a very, very common scenario. Maybe you are transferring your powerhouse from from one geography to a different geography, okay? Maybe you are changing the cultural things, or maybe you are acquiring a new company. Okay, so there are several such challenges which come during the service transitioning, and they are very sensitive, friends. Okay, if it is not handled well, there may be a chaos in the organization support. So let's discuss them in the future slides. Insufficient information, always a problem. Okay, if your existing partner has not documented enough, if your existing employees have not documented enough information, imagine it becomes very difficult for a new partner, to manage the show. Take an example of the pilot flying Boeing or a flying Airbus. Okay, both are pilot. However, both know fundamentally how to, fly the plane, but the technology and the platform changes, right? So if the Boeing pilot is not provided with adequate information in form of a training or in form of a documentation, he may have a hard time to fly the Airbus. As simple as that. Okay, knowledge sharing is something plays a very sensitive role. So it is always recommended so that whenever the partner is onboarded, whenever the operations are streamlined, you ensure that the partner is also preparing the documentation as and when we progress. Okay, documentation is something I've seen it many of the organization lacks. Why? Because it's a boring. Nobody reads a document even if I've prepared. But whenever you have such transitioning, those documents can only come at your mercy, right? So very very important one. And also you have the documentation even if it is existing. Is it current? Is it updated one? That also needs to be factored in. So friends, the challenges are endless. Okay, let's talk about few more challenges to make it more interesting. Okay, so you have always the pressure in terms of timeline because you remember that you have the parallel billing happening. Your existing partner is also billing you, and your newly onboarded partner is also billing you, right? So you are, a pressure in terms of cost as well. You have to be absolutely sure that by what time you'll be giving exit to the existing partner, because it's at the end of the day, it's a cost, something which is you are paying from your pocket, right? So that's one thing. Timeline is also a critical factor. So say for instance, if your existing partner agreement says that they can have or they'll provide a handholding for 3 months, you always have a clock running in your head that after 3 months this partner will exit. And if you want to still extend, they'll obviously charge premium, right? Because they also have their own arrangement, and they also want to ensure that their engineers are placed at some other project, right? Again, the limited time in hand for the knowledge transfer. Many a time it happens that the parallel run does not go as it is expected. Furthermore, challenges. You have the skill set issue, you have the people issue, you have the cultural issue. The new team and the old team may not gel well. Okay, so there are some soft issues which you have to deal with it, right? So the one who is kind of leading the project, or the one who is kind of managing, or I mean managing the show from the partner point of view and from the organization point of view, needs to be in complete sync and should envisage such issues which are going to come. Okay, so that's why the absolute sync is absolutely important. Moving on to the service transitioning approach. So if you notice, we have the proper due diligence done at the time of onboarding. You have a transition phase. Okay, once you have the parallel run, the operation is steady, and then probably you can confirm and you can declare that the transition is completed, right? So again, it's a very scientific process. If it is managed well, you have a lesser issues. Otherwise, you tend to run out into a lot of issues, right? Moving on to the success criteria, if you want to really achieve the seamless transition, okay, from one partner to a different partner, these are the few success criteria which are just called out here. One is plan well, always. Okay, envisaged well. Use your previous experience. Okay, so if you have already, if some of your team member has already or was already a part of the transition during his or her career journey, please include them to share the best practices. Okay, ensure that you have an effective and aggressive people on job, and they are doing the meticulous job, right? Also ensure that you have the complete documentation created if it is not there, and updated even if the documentation is available, and you are giving formal sign off. Okay, one of the factor because of which the transitioning fails is the documentation. Okay, again, have a close monitoring, close working between the teams. As I said, there may be a soft issues, there may be a people issues in the process of the transitioning. There may be a job insecurity issues and all. that needs to be, you know, kind of deal with it. So if I talk about the service transitioning triad, okay, there are three components which holds a very, very, very big importance in the successful service transitioning. Let's talk about them. Knowledge management, we already briefly talked about it, that whatever is there, even if it is a minimal or a smaller process, document it. It may be helpful to you at some point in time. Okay. Performance management, what you know, the performance my partner was, or my earlier partner was, you know, kind of giving me. And if I am changing the partner because of the performance issues, has my performance improved, right? Also, service management, the entire gamut of service management, which we discussed in the previous chapter. So these are the three triad of the service transitioning place, you know, or can be of helpful as and when you do. Okay, so knowledge management we have discussed, understand as is environment, any obligations my outgoing party has, okay, any obligations my incoming party might have, that, you know, the obligation could be in the form of a parking space, the obligation could be in the form of, you know, adequate training, the adequate could be in the form of, you know, providing the food and the cafeteria and so forth. Envisage all these. If you are not envisaging it, then at later point in time, if you fix up the gaps, then it becomes really challenging for the organization. Okay, incentivize the people, identify, motivate, incentivize the people for whosoever is, you know, kind of involved in this transitioning. Again, you may also would like to retain few key people from the existing team. Okay, many a time you might have noticed that certain two or three people are picked up and, you know, kind of move to the new partner because they have a know-how, they have a existing knowledge, and they can guide the new team, right? Training goes without saying. The person whosoever is onboarded, person, people, team, whosoever is onboarded has to be trained well, because they may be expert in their area, but they may be new to my business. Okay, let's talk more. Okay, service transitioning triad, the third element is the service management. Okay, one should have a proper governance in place. Now this this governance model could be a monthly steering meeting with the involvement of the senior leadership. Okay, maybe everyday meeting, or maybe the daily huddle meeting, and so forth. Clear out all the roles and responsibilities which you have, mentioned, documented in the SLA. Have the frequent communication going to the internal and external management or the stakeholder. You can always say that, hey, this transitioning is happening. You may have the glitch for a few days, few weeks, but this will be, you know, kind of normalized. In case of any issues, please reach out to the so-and-so contacts, okay? And finally, the operation stability. It is very, very important that to have a successful transitioning, you bring in the more and more automation. Automation will help you, streamlining the process and making your transitioning very fast. Like, your resolution, if it is completely automated, maybe you have a self-service support bot installed, so user may not raise a ticket for the password reset example. Okay, so the more and more automation you bring, the easier your life would be. And that's why all new agreements or all new kind of engagements, they also greatly talk about the automation, how much my mundane tasks are being automated. Okay, And again, the bringing the standardization. Okay, why standardization? Again, to make my life easy. If I do not have a standards in place, then it's, you know, again a problem. Next topic, on the contractual obligation, contractual clauses. What are the contracts? So to explain you in the layman language, contracts are nothing but a written form of a document. Okay, which is agreed between the parties and has all the details listed it out. Now this detail could be several things, right, from a scope of work to the indemnity clauses to the code of law and so forth, right? So that's a written piece of document which holds importance in the event of any dispute, right? What are the characteristics of the contracts? So the contracts are nothing but, since it's a written form of a document, generally in the common language, which is easy to understand by both the parties. Okay, you have the understanding between supplier and the customer very clear. Second is, since it is signed and approved by the senior management, even they are in sync, that, you know, whatever operational challenges which are being, you know, kind of reported on the ground, it can be sorted out once it reaches there. Okay? It covers the and protects your financial liability as well. So as I had given an example before, that if you are into a telecom, if you are regulated, you may have a large penalty if you are, you know, failing to comply the law. Okay? So because of which you can have the contractual clauses in a way that in case of any such event happens, you will share the loss. And finally, you know, the preference is always to have the longer term agreement so that you are not investing your time unnecessarily to enter into this documentation stuff. So let me talk about a few of the clauses or a few of the, you know, the pointers which you must think and ask your management to include if you are a part of the vendor onboarding process. Okay? So if you are reviewing the contract, it's important that you document the service level agreement clearly. What are the expectations? There are also licenses clause one should include. If you are taking the software services, the license will be owned by whom? License is required to be renewed every year, or it's only one time. So everything needs to be factored there. Whatever the promise of professional services in terms of KPI, in terms of any value add, any support in a project, you know, all this factor needs to be factored into any charges and payment. And taxation, etc., etc., should be a part of it. If any partner, or if you are say, buying a product, so you may also have a warranty, right? So warranty, the duration of the warranty, what if the warranty fails, what are the associated clauses pertaining to this warranty should be factored there. Again, what is the limitation of liability? So if, say, for example, the GDR, the GDPR, which we know the regulation, right? 4% of the revenue. Which will be charged as a penalty. So obviously there has to be limitation there, right? So you should properly call out such limitation of liability there from the partner standpoint, training requirement, and so on and so forth. So the list is long. This is just to give you a gist of it that, you know, these are the important components which you must factor into the contractual agreement. Because as I say again, the return is something which will protect you. Okay? Again, for having the vendor onboarded. Now, as I mentioned, right, I was a part of working on a project which was pertaining to the Indian Air Force during my initial stage of a career, right? And obviously, I was from the third party or from the partner point of view. Since I am going to enter into a sensitive establishment, right, I mentioned that I was responsible for connecting all the Air Force stations, fewer. Also the flying bases, we were also housing the missiles, right? So my background check needs to be done. So that background check is a ownership could be of the provider, supplier, or you know, the company which is, you know, kind of taking the services. So in my case, my background check was done from a Vayu Bhavan, Delhi, because they also have a kind of association with the police and the local administration and all. Because since it's a very very sensitive facility, I was going to work there, so it was very very important. So likewise, the background check is something which you would like to include as a part of the ask. Law of land, we've discussed in the previous chapter also. So to give you an example, okay. If any partner is providing a services in, say, China, and the law of China says that whatever traffic needs to pass through the Great Firewall of China, okay, is that included as a part of your contractual agreement, right? Another thing, any penalty for non-compliance, we all of us are aware, and any risk, if it is, you know, kind of identified beforehand, good, you can have a mitigation control. But if it is not, whose responsibility it would be to identify the risk and, you know, mitigate it. Okay, moving on to the further application management stuff. So now it was all about the contractual agreement. Now let's spend some time on the application management point of view. So having a management, or, you know, onboarding a management is also a big task for any organization. Since the subject is of the IT infrastructure, we'll only touch base on the application standpoint. But yes, it is something important area which we should learn. So again, from the application point of view, like how in the partner point of view, you were responsible for studying the requirement, same for application standpoint, requirement analysis needs to be done. Once the requirement analysis is done, you need to design, right? Design, once the design is finalized, you obviously build, start working on it. Once it is done, it is tested in the environment, you go ahead and deploy. And operation and sustenance goes without saying, and optimize. Remember, infrastructure component gets depreciated and gets retired, but application gets appreciated and gets enhanced. Okay, so that's a difference between infrastructure and application. You must know this and you must keep in mind. Application management covers a few more things that you know you want to be developed, keeping the service management requirement, right? So whatever is a requirement in the service management, even if it is an application management, you must have some clauses which may overlap, which may assist you, help you in doing the application management also. Okay, designed and built for operability, availability, reliability, maintainability, nothing else. But if you have an application, you naturally need to maintain it, right? Regular patches, bug clearance, and so on and so forth. So all should be a part of your agreement or your understanding. There are a few more clauses as we go. Let's call out a few. So the service management focuses on the activities and are involved right from the release to the delivery to the enhancement to the any new modification and so on and so forth, right? So this covers the entire gamut or life cycle of the application management. If you have a minor bug fix, maybe you can go ahead and do it without any additional charges. But if there is a version upgrade or a severe enhancement, maybe the partner can charge you. But that clarity has to be there in the agreements whenever you are entering. Okay, few more points to touch base on the application management point of view is the lifecycle management. As I said, it is something as a defined process and effective if you have a checklist. So you know that you are going to use this application. So if you have defined a checklist and you can keep on keeping a tick or doing a tick against all the stop points, it'll be easier for you to manage the applications effectively. Again, whosoever individuals are involved in the change flow or in the application flow, that also needs to be clearly documented, right? Application management versus service management, a very simple and a straightforward measurements and matrices, okay, must be woven through the complete organization, touching the strategies as well as the tactical and operation level. Tactical is something on the technical front. Operation level is something related to SLA and all sort of stuff. Question comes in as asset management. What is an asset? When I ask this question, I generally get an answer that asset is server, asset is database, asset is network device, asset is firewall, and so on and so forth. How about the asset in the form of a human knowledge? Your employee is also an asset. Okay, this world is a very volatile, very uncertain, right? You may never know that what is going to come next. It's also very ambiguous as well, right? So it is very, very important that you have the proper asset management in place. With the simple reason that asset is something which is holding the information. Asset is something which will be used to run your business operations, right? So in this VUCA world, it is very important that you have the adequate asset management. Again, you have physical inventory and all sort of stuff that we'll be talking in just a bit. But one of the important thing you must know that that the asset management, if you are using it optimized or you're optimizing your existing investment or not, okay? It is a very important question senior management always ask. So whenever you're going for capacity expansion or having a new project requirement, the first question they will ask you, are we leveraging the existing infrastructure? Have we already received what we had invested for, right? So these tough questions comes in. Also the human factor, I just mentioned that these are the non-tangible asset because they house a lot of information with them. Okay, so again, the careful management, careful planning, and the improvement of skills and upgradation of knowledge is also or should also be factored as a part of your asset management lifecycle. Asset management, the property, plant, equipment are tangible assets. We all of us know tangible is nothing but we touch, feel, see, okay, smell. That is the tangible asset. Intangible is something something which we cannot see. So maybe your intellectual property rights, maybe some formula, or maybe something else, you know, which you cannot see, maybe a brand value, which you cannot see, right? Those are the intangible assets, right? Even if, so once we talk about the asset as in physical form, okay, it needs to be managed well. As I said, the asset value gets depreciated. In fact, your car, my car will also be having the depreciated value over a period of year. You might have noticed that whenever you renew your insurance, you see the IDV value gets, you know, dropped. Why? Because it is asset, it's a liability, right? So my value of the asset is going to be decreasing over a period of year. In fact, for the IT devices, depending on the maturity of the organization, I may have the life of an asset of 5 years, I may have life in asset of 3 years as well. So after 5 years, my book value of that asset, of that server, of that you know, infrastructure will be zero. So I can go ahead and, you know, kind of optimize, I can go ahead and kind of retire that asset, right? But this in-house check or the updation of the inventory in the books of account has to be done. Okay, so let's talk about a little bit of steps on the physical asset management. First, you need to identify the asset. If you do not identify, how will you, you know, kind of record it in the books of account, or how will you even protect it? So identification becomes more important from the security point of view. If you do not know, you cannot protect. That's a very, very, you know, common statement or a golden statement which is used in the information security field, right? If you have identified the asset, it also helps you in avoiding the duplication. Okay, once the asset is kind of identified, you have that also identify the depreciation value, because remember you have to record it on which day of the month it was you know, onboarded. So from then on the depreciation cycle would start, right? In case you want to plan your capacity management or you know, the enhancement, if it is recorded, documented, it becomes easy for you to augment the existing facility, existing infrastructure. And finally, once you are done with the usage of the asset, every asset has a life cycle, even the human also have a life cycle, right? So once we are done with the asset usage, you have to be ensuring that it is getting disposed in a safe way. Disposed in a safe way in the quotes. Why? Because that asset, that hard drive, that piece of information may also be holding a lot of intellectual information of the organization. It may have the financial records, it may have something else, right? So asset lifecycle plays a very, very major role right from the birth. So everything has a life cycle, as I mentioned. So when you plan and procure, there are certain steps which are part of that life cycle, which could be what is I am asked for, okay? My PO creation, my order processing, and my onboarding of you know, the device, right? If I talk about the inventory as a second step, I would like to have the shipping and tracking and receiving information. I would like to have a PO reconciliation. I would like to be, because for clearing the PO, I need to reconcile my PO. For clearing the invoices, I have to reconcile it with my PO as well, right? So you know, my count, my minimum, maximum level. And once I do that, I deploy it in my environment. Okay, I may stage it for some monitoring purpose for say a day or something, and then I move it onto the production or a live environment. So I would be obviously going for the configuration, the asset tagging, and so on and so forth. Operations, it's a regular operation and sustenance kind of model, where once I've deployed my asset, I will be continue to using it, right? And finally, retirement. If my asset has gone you know, bad physically, I may create an RMA. So RMA is nothing but you know, I raise a ticket with the provider if it is in warranty, and the provider gives me the another product in the replacement of that product, right? So this is about the asset management lifecycle, but it was a very traditional way of doing it. These days the things have changed, people have moved on, right? Because the manual asset management creates a lot of problem, a lot of confusion. The asset management managed by one may be very, very different than the asset management managed by the other department. I have personally seen that, you know, in the event of the vulnerability and assessment exercise, you know, I mean, if you do not know, there is a yearly practice of vulnerability and assessment exercise which every organization conducts. So as a part of this exercise, you are asked to provide your inventory. And whenever the third party comes aboard, and when they scan the network, they find that at least 5 or 10% of the inventory are not reachable. When you further investigate, you come to know that they are retired and nobody, you know, bothered to update the records. And you continue to pay to the partner, you know, who is managing our asset. So now the way is, you know, kind of a complete digitization, right? So what happens as a part of the digitization is the end user will be having the virtual kind of purchase assistant, a bot kind of stuff. So he will raise a request, the entire workflow gets triggered in the backend. Okay, now this workflow will have you know, the right from the purchase request to the purchase order to the shipping of the order to the supplier, the approval, once the, you know, say the product is received, the tracking of it, the onboarding of it, everything is now digitized. Once you defined in the workflow that after so and so time, my AMC or my annual maintenance contract needs to be reviewed, you get an auto alert from the system, which reminds you to renew your contract. You do that, you continue to use it, and beyond a point, once the asset reaches at the end stage of its life, it goes ahead for a, you know, kind of disposal state. Okay, everything is kind of digitized, right? So there are several tools. Of course, when the digitalization comes, there has to be new technology which, you know, kind of is required to support that digitization journey, right? So what happens is you have the AI based tool which continuously keeps you know, track of the inventory, continuously monitors it, and, you know, it kind of also provides you the correlation between the several assets if it is, you know, kind of dependent. In fact, many of the automated tool also have the configuration management database, so that it gives you the complete picture. So whenever you raise a change for that specific asset, all underlying asset which are going to be affected, that, you know, kind comes up as a part of the workflow, so that you know that if you are making the changes here, it will also affect somewhere the other asset which are there, you know, down the line in the chain, right? So this new way of digitization of asset, though it's very expensive, let me, you know, put a disclaimer there, it is not easy, as we say, because you have thousands of asset in your environment. Scanning may be easy with the help of free tool, however the way of life cycle is, you know, a bit of expensive set of affairs. But if your organization is determined to, you know, manage the inventory effectively, that's the way of you know, going. So as I explained about two slides back, the entire workflow is automated. So right from the automation of handling the tickets, approval, the procurement, and so forth, goes with this automated way. There is also a saying or a word which is used for a zero touch provisioning. Zero touch provisioning is nothing but, you know, take an example of SD-WAN device. Okay, so software defined WAN network. So I have a requirement to connect my one of the unit. What I'll probably do is I will procure an internet circuit there, a plain internet circuit, maybe a broadband of 10 meg, 100 meg, whatever. I will ship the device, okay? I will instruct my the local staff, maybe IT, maybe non-IT, to connect, just connect that device into a network. The moment he connects, my centralized system will automatically detect that, hey, there is one device which is being introduced. Is it yours? Is it authorized one? If yes, you can see it on the console. With a click of a button, the entire configuration is pushed onto the device and you are up and running and your branch is connected with a zero touch. Earlier, the case used to happen wherein we used to ship the router, the engineer used to be arranged, he used to go with the laptop, with the console cable, put some commands on the router, make it as a basic configuration, give the control to the centralized person, and then you're done, right? So those days are gone. Okay, so it's a new way of working and a new way of managing the inventory, right? Again, upkeep of inventory is also important. Having an investment in the technology is good, but what about the upkeep of those, you know, technology? You are changing something at your primary data center. Is there any effect into the your disaster recovery facility, right? If it is that also being factored? If something is changed at your disaster recovery site, is the required associated document changed? If it is a new technology, is my engineer, my people, my supporting staff is trained enough, right? So all such factors are very small, but they're very, very important ones. For last phase about the asset life cycle is the retirement. Most of you might have heard of the concept of e-waste, right? E-waste is something, a new way. There are also several ways to get rid of the data which is there on the server or whatever infrastructure you're going to retire. You have to be absolutely sure that whenever you are retiring your asset, that entire data is wiped off completely, because you may never know that if that asset is being reused or not. So for a safety purpose, what the best way to destroy that asset is physically destruction of the asset. That's the only way to ensure that your asset is not going to be reused, right? Few advantages of the asset management, few of them we have already discussed, but let's touch base again on this slide. If I have the adequate asset management in place, I deliver a superior experience to my employees. Okay, I know for sure that this asset is going to retire, I may would like to upgrade it, okay, which is again adding back to my end user experience. It drastically reduces my pain of managing the inventory, okay? Right? Because if I have the proper asset management lifecycle in place, it provides me a superior visibility. So today I may not be going for a certification, industry certification. Tomorrow, if I want to go for some certification, I also have to categorize my asset based on the criticality. Okay, I may categorize that. If my assets are in the data center, they are super critical. If they are at a branch office, they are probably of the low criticality, right? But how will I come to know if I have the adequate asset management in place? The asset management lifecycle, the retirement also plays a very, very important role in this entire segment. Okay, with this we end this chapter, friends. What we learned?